Welcome to my favourite Elliott Smith song. If you haven't listened to us before, we're all about keeping Elliott Smith's legacy alive by speaking to well-known fans about their favourite song of his. So hi and welcome to episode 7 of the season. Our guest today is Chan Kinchler, a musician and guitarist in the band Blues Traveller. Now Chan picked Clementine from the Elliott Smith self-titled album to talk about today. It's a personal favourite of mine and a track we've never actually discussed before. So in this interview, he goes deep on this song, discusses how he only fairly recently became a big Elliott fan, and he also reveals a coincidence that brought him and my co-host Elizabeth together in New York in the mid-90s. And here they are around 30 years later in LA. This is Elizabeth talking to Chan.
Hello, I am Chan Kinchler, guitar player for the band Blues Traveller, and then I also do some solo activities and various projects around Los Angeles. Today, we're going to be talking about Clementine, as we had talked. I wanted to do a song that I love. Picking a favorite Elliott Smith song is like picking your favorite child, which, you know, on different days is a different child. But Clementine is certainly one of my favorites, and it hadn't been done before. So I figured we should give it the service it deserves. It's such a beautiful and an amazing song, and it's cool because it's early in his solo process, so it's kind of a touchstone for some of the stuff that comes later.
Waking you up to close the bar. Streets, what you can tell by the sound of the cars. The bartender singing Clementine, while he's turning around the open sign.
From the self-titled album, which is one of my favorite albums, can you tell me, like, what draws you to Clementine?
The thing that stuck with me, one of the things that stuck with me is, and it's a great thing that Elliott's a master at his songwriting, is he, at the end of songs, he suspends the chord pattern and evolves it with all these passing chords. So it's more and more tension, different chords from the main body of the song, where he kind of plays with the melody, the main melody, and it goes farther and farther away, and then it comes right back to the main hook of the song. And in Clementine, he's got that, you know, the oh my darling, oh my darling, oh my darling, oh oh. He does all this great harmonies and chord changes that really suspend the song kind of in ether. And that stuff just stuck with me forever after I heard that song. And I really wanted to know what he was doing. I just did I do recall in some of my trips down the wormhole on Elliott Smith that at some point he said in his teens, he just only wrote songs that were all passing chords, which means every chord would like lead to another chord. And you could kind of go through, you know, in the different keys, change in different keys with passing chords. And he was a master at it. But going forward in a lot of his songs, he does do these great little alternative chord progressions at the end of his songs that kind of put a bow on the whole song. And he's great at it. And this is one of the first ones where I really noticed it. As well, these really lush harmonies, he's really starting to incorporate. That became such a signature of his stuff later on, because, you know, as he got more tracks and got a little more, I think, studio chops on his own, he started to add more and more. You know, I really love Bottle Up and Explode, or sorry, Roman Candle. But that's so basic. He didn't really have much room to add a lot of things. So Clementine is where I really first started to notice, you know, kind of what the future held.
Still hurt, man. It seems a long time gone. Maybe the whole thing's wrong. think so, but just didn't say so. Take yourself into slow.
We could talk about me and what I love about Elliott Smith, but staying on Clementine, all these different voicings to me sometimes would clutter up songs for me, and he did it so fluidly that it was a natural evolution. The other great thing about Clementine, which I turned me onto it, is he plays it in this drop C tuning, which is basically with guitars usually tuned to E. If you drop it down to D, that's a step down, and C is another half step. So all this, the strings are waggling all over the place. It's about as low as you can put a guitar. And then he's got this in a drop C, but it's with a ninth, so it's like a C9, which is a kind of gives it that kind of folky, dreamy aspect. But the way when he's playing it, the especially the low strings kind of buzz and jangle, and it's got, and he does this on a bunch of songs, Independence Day and several others, where that low C is. And he seems to like to let it buzz. There'll be times when it's really pronounced and he leaves it in, because I think he's doing it on purpose, because it's just got this really earthy sound. And, you know, it probably helped, you know, I think his low part of his voice could sit there and he could hit the high notes too. So I'm sure that's one of the reasons. But as a guitar player, it was fun to really get into some of these really, I'd never played anything drop that low. And it just comes, you know, the chords sound different in different keys with the strings vibrating at different ways. You know, with guitar, it's only six strings. So the voicing has everything to do with how the chord sounds. So the exact same chord, to say it's a C, played in different places with different tunings, will sound totally different and add a lot of different character. And he was constantly messing with that. I think he really loved the intervals and how the strings vibrated, because I hear him playing with that a lot. And he does the voicings, really unique voicings. He doesn't do standard, you know, basic bitch voicings.
And what about lyrically? Were you drawn to this song?
Oh, 100%. And the line, it's just another great Elliott Smith skill, is painting the picture. Mm-hmm. You know, waking you up to close the bar, the streets are wet, you can tell by the car, the sound of the cars. That's like you're there. You know, we've all kind of been late at night, kind of groggy, and you hear the wet tires, and, you know, it's very Portlandia. And then, you know, so that imagery moves me, because it's, you know, it's kind of very melancholy. Like a lot of his songs, I know he can get kind of edgy and dark, but a lot of it to me is this kind of dreamy, daydreamy kind of aspect, and that's kind of the feeling I got from Clementine. And then, you know, the bartender, he's setting the picture, but then the song, you know, Oh My Darling Clementine, is this kind of lullaby old school song about a lost love. So to put all that together, paint the picture, and have that that reference to this old song that he's now playing with, you know, right off the bat in like four lines, you're into the picture. You know, and I think that's just amazing lyric writing. And, you know,
I mean, it's sort of like it's sort of a sad setting, this person. But the way that he put that song together and sort of this observation of this person, you sort of feel endeared to them. Right?
Sure. For sure. I mean, it's pretty interesting. It's almost like he takes a bird eye view of himself quite often in his songs. And, you know, for me, they speak to me because I'm a recovering alcoholic myself. So I look back on a lot of those situations, and as kind of dark as they were, there's some good memories in like this kind of unaccountable world that that I once lived in. I think that does draw me to it as well. It's kind of, I know that whole lifestyle. I've been there, waking up, you know, at the bar with the wet streets outside, thinking about some girl that's mad at me.
Take yourself into slow-mo. angel in the snow. Anything to pass the time. Keep that song out of your mind.
Is this a song that you have tried to play before?
I actually figured this is one of the songs before we decided to do it. Yeah, this is one of the songs I figured out, mainly because of that chord, what I talked to you about, the really cool evolution of chords at the end of it, I just thought were so fantastic. And then I found the tuning, and I'm like, this is just so alien. I wanted to dive in. And Elliot's got, the cool thing is I'm really been working on my singing a lot, and I've got a really loud, big voice, and one of my bands is like a loud rock band, and singing with a loud rock band is one, you know, it's just a lot more of a boisterous, bigger voice. But I've been, songs like Clementine, I've had to learn how to sing up the top of my range, mm-hmm. and kind of more quiet. So it's really helped me kind of find that part of my voice, because it's, you know, more options means you can do more emotionally and build the song a little bit. So I loved it for that reason. So I butcher a pretty darn good version of Clementine, which I haven't played it live yet, but I'm going to. If I stop breaking strings every time I drop it down to this crazy low C tuning, which scares me live.
Oh.
You can't yank it. You got to go slow. Because Elliot, when he's like playing, he's just running this. And I'm like, how does he do it? Every time I try to do it that fast, I snap a string.
Were you a fan of Elliot Smith at the time, like when the self-titled album came out, or did you?
Well, here's the interesting thing. And as it turns out, me and Elliot would have been the same age within a couple months. Now, I came up I think one of his early favorite bands was The Clash. Like, we have all the same touchstones growing up. Like, just time-wise. And so I hear a lot of that in the music, you know. And I know The Clash was one of my favorite bands growing up, and I know he was a big Clash fan, as many people are. As a guitar player, I got really into improvisational playing. So I got really into, like, Led Zeppelin, you know. I got into soloing, and that was my band. And we were all about playing live, improvisational kind of jam rock. The term jam band hadn't been invented yet, but so that's where we dove all the way in. So we were like, we'd open up for the Allman Brothers and Carlos Santana, things along those lines, and that's the whole world we immersed ourselves in. So, and this is late 80s, and we were coming up in New York City, late 80s. That's where the band kind of got itself together, and that. You know, I was in Constant World. And then, you know, if you're in a band, especially when you're young and coming up, you're all about your band. Mm-hmm. And for probably a decade, it was just Blues Traveler and like whoever we ended up playing with. And Elliot Smith kind of music was from another world. But I do recall hearing his songs back then and be like, oh, this is good. Mm-hmm. But never really crossed my transom. And then I had kids, and then I was completely in my baby bubble. Band baby bubble, then my drinking and everything. I kind of went hard into that, and so about 5 years ago, I sobered up, and my kids had kind of grown up. So I'm like, I really need a hobby. I was like, oh, I like playing guitar, so I figured I'd start playing around Los Angeles where I live, mm-hmm. and working on my singing, all that. So I start doing that, and I'm playing a lot of acoustic, and I'm like, you know, I don't like any of this old kind of folky acoustic so much. I'm like, but I really like playing acoustic. Who's my favorite acoustic player? And for some reason, Elliot Smith pops in my head. I'm like, he's so good at acoustic guitar, and I was vaguely familiar with him. And I had seen Heaven Adores You on my Prime. So I was like, I'll watch that because I'm kind of just curious. And the song Happiness on there. And I was like, that's the song. I gotta learn that song. So I listened to that song on the Elliott Smith. And I was like, this, I figured it out, which it's a bear of a song to play. It's a pretty tricky song, like 97% of his songs. But I had such a fun time learning it. And then I listened to Figure Eight. And then I was gone. But this all happened in the last year and a half.
Oh, wow.
So I'm fully immersed. I'm like first blush down the wormhole.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is I always joke with my friends, I haven't been this giddy about music mm-hmm. and like a particular artist, like fanboy, total fanboy, since I was like a teenager.
Yeah.
You know, David Bowie, The Clash, The Police.
Right.
Those were like, you know, and Led Zeppelin. Those were kind of probably my high school band's The Jam. So it's been a fun ride. And like I said, for the last year, I don't know if a day has gone by that I haven't been listening to Elliott Smith. And for playing guitar, I think one of the things that drew me to him the most is as a guitar player, it's just such great guitar playing and such clever songwriting. He has no boxes at all. He lets the song go wherever it went. And mm-hmm. I think as kids growing up in the 80s with new wave and punk rock, a lot of like the blues and rock formulas kind of got thrown out the window. And it was just more of a sonic, creating sonic landscapes. That's what new wave really was. It wasn't because a lot of the players weren't very trained. So they just mm-hmm. followed what sounded cool. So I think I grew up, kind of went back to that. And, you know, as Blues Traveler, my main band, we've always been kind of outside that box too. We do kind of a lot of weird stuff. I always joke, we're not good enough to sound like anyone else, but so we just try and sound like ourselves. But this whole last year and a half has just been me down the wormhole, having always liked Elliott Smith, but he's become my soundtrack to my sobriety.
So it's kind of fun to discover music that, you know, you missed at some point. Because it's similar for me. I mean, I started listening to Elliott sooner than a year and a half ago, but I didn't really come to his music until the early 2000s. I don't know why. Like, I just was listening to other stuff. I'm not sure. It just didn't cross my path. But then when I... You know, so I started with an album and then he passed away. And then I slowly went through his catalog. And it was actually really nice to do that, to be able to, you know, take my time, like, you know, hold off and listening to something and then really listen to the album.
So. For sure. It's been great because it's all there, you know. So it's like, you know, you find a great series or something. You're like, you don't have to wait for the next episode. You can just dive in. And I guess it's kind of funny. I've started with Figure Eight because Happiness is on there. And I went to EXO, and then became my new favorite. I think that first eight songs in EXO is probably as perfect. And when people ask about Elliott Smith, I'm like, just listen to the first eight songs in EXO. That's like, yeah. It's got the whole gamut and it's pretty accessible. Mm-hmm. But then going back and back, and I honestly, Roman Candle for a while became my favorite record because it's just so simple and honest and like creative. And then on, I was just listening, it's called Grand Mall Rarities, which you can get on YouTube. Mm-hmm. There's a song On the Highway, which is just so beautiful. And then there's this other song, See You in Heaven, which is just the music. And it's you know, the you know, like most depressive people, suicide's a possibility or it's something they're fighting. Mm-hmm. So, you know, because it's See You in Heaven, and he doesn't put any lyrics on it.
Right.
But at the same time, it's, you know.
It's also optimistic, right? Like,
yeah.
See you in heaven. We'll be
well,
there.
And the music's very optimistic,
yeah.
But, you know, just the selfish person in me, I'm like, because the music's so good, I'm like, oh my God, I would just, I mean, he left us this little, like, let's see what else I could have done, you know? Because I just listened to this morning, just to kind of get, oh, and I have one other Elliott Smith in this last year. So about a year and a half ago when I was fully down the wormhole, I just listen to him all day long. I still do some days, but I'm going to my friend's, is in West Hollywood in Hollywood has a comedy show. It's just going to support a buddy. And is at this little performance space. And I'm driving over Laurel Canyon down, past Mulholland and by Los Feliz, cranking Elliott Smith. I'm like, oh, this is like Elliott Smith's hood. Cranking Elliott Smith, windows open, beautiful kind of winter day, LA winter night, evening. And I get to this performance space and I see my buddy across the, it's like a packed room. And he's like, what you been up to? I'm like, I've gotten completely down the wormhole on this guy, Elliott Smith. And he's like, Elliott Smith. He didn't even know who he was, which happens. This guy was kind of more of a hippie music fan. And I'm like, he's like, Elliott Smith. He's like, who's that? I'm like, and I look up and there's a picture of Elliott Smith right behind him on the wall of this performance room. And I'm like, that's him. And he turns around and it was Ross Harris, who did a bunch of his videos, and he's also a photographer, yeah. Who you may know as your photographer. He was having an exhibit. Mm-hmm. And so I look around and there's Elliott Smith photos just all around, which pretty much meant it was a sign from Elliott that I should keep diving in.
I'm going to bring our conversation to a different moment here. You mentioned, blues traveler starting out in the late 80s and being in New York and kind of where you guys came together. Oddly, I went to college in Brooklyn, in Clinton Hill, and briefly lived in this brownstone that a number of the blues travelers, including yourself,
yes.
was living in.
So I'll paint the picture for blues traveler. We came to New York in 87, and then, at a certain point, kind of like most band stories, we all moved in together. And one of the last place, it was the nicest place, the hell holes we lived in before, don't bear mentioning. However, one of them was on Bergen Street, two blocks from where Elliott Smith lived. So I know that area. But so you know how far down the wormhole I've gone. I know what street Elliott Smith lived on in New York. And he moved into New York just the year I moved out of New York, 97. Anyway, so we lived in this big brownstone that was a Gilded Age kind of mansion and this crazy guy Legion owned the place and it turned it into apartments, and the band all lived in the top floor. But eventually, as the band moved out, I moved all the way down to the first floor, which is this huge ballroom with a chandelier and beautiful molding, and it was just a bed, a TV, and a chair in there. And I moved out in 94 95, and you'd never guess who moved in.
I moved in there. At that time my boyfriend was living in the basement apartment there,
which I would think I'd met him down in the kitchen area.
And so your room was much nicer than the basement.
Yeah, that's to this day, my favorite New York apartment, just because it was a ballroom.
So I moved up there, and then, I went to Pratt and studied photography there. So I'm very into photographs. But there were some photographs that were left in the there was like a closet in there. And at the time, I knew, they must be yours, but not knowing like how to get back in touch with you.
Because it was the 90s. Yes. So you were, once someone left your view, you were long gone.
So I've kept them all these years, just one, because I have a collection of photographs, but also just like, photographs are important to me, and thinking that, you would want them and not wanting anything to happen to them.
And just for the listener, this is completely aside from the two of us getting together to do this podcast. Then she dropped this on me after we'd already arranged to do it. So this is beyond coincidence.
These pictures I know are yours. And then there's
Gosh, this is great.
There's some that I didn't know because they've gotten so blended in with all the other pictures that I have.
Oh, this is like my New York days. This is so great. Me and my little bro. Look at that.
We'll snap a few photos of some of these pictures so people can see what the heck we're talking to. But
these are priceless.
Yeah.
You have no idea how excited I am to get them. And I'm not surprised I left them because, like I said, back then we toured probably like 200 dates a year we were out and about. So I was home not a lot. And like I moved out, I was probably just like, let's go.
Yeah.
Where's my chair, my bed, and my TV if I even took those?
It's always interesting for us to stumble across somebody that we wouldn't think is an Elliott Smith fan.
Like I said, I was an appreciator of him from afar, but I'm not to this level. And it's pretty interesting because I've spent my life playing with real hardcore musicians. And generally in this jam band world, people are not that familiar with Elliott Smith. Occasionally I'll meet someone like, oh yeah. And when they do, their eyes light up.
Yeah.
But most people who I mention it to respect him greatly as a musician. So that's like, most people know who he is and respect him as a musician, whether they're rabid like myself or some other people I meet, then is more rare. I always say he's kind of like the musician's musician, you know, the songwriter's songwriter. Mm. And I always find it interesting, like on the, you know, some of the local kind of more alternative radio stations I hear, they don't play a lot of Elliott Smith, but they'll play all these artists. And I bet at least 50% of those artists will cite Elliott Smith as one of their biggest influences.
Yeah.
So step it up, radio, go to the source. The nice thing about music now is you're not like back in the 90s, it was what was on the radio and what was on MTV, VH1 mm-hmm. for the most part. Now you can get exposed to so much great music. And I, you know, one of the great things about getting into Elliott Smith is it's led me down wormholes into all kinds of other great artists. Like Alex G is someone I've gotten into lately who's fantastic. And it's kind of endless, all the cool stuff I've gotten into because I've been down the Elliott Smith wormhole because I just like, oh, what else is like that, you know?
I think we'll wrap it up.
Okay.
So thank you for being a guest and chatting with us. So great to hear your recent, you know, infatuation.
Yeah, it's a total infatuation. And, you know, there's all the, you know, he was a very compelling and interesting personality. But really, when it comes down to it, what I love is it's just the melodies, the words, the chords, the creativity, the just the artist side of it is just so compelling to me. And the rest of the stuff is interesting, but we can never really know what was going through the guy's head.
Yeah.
But other than the music he left us, which is just a beautiful, beautiful thing. And obviously it's touched a lot of people and it means a lot to me.
Thanks a lot then to Chan Kinchler for being a great guest on the podcast. If you want to find out more about Chan and the projects he's working on, there are some links in the episode notes. That's about it for this week. Thank you very much for listening. And of course, please do rate and review us if you're enjoying the show. We'll be back in a couple of weeks' time. See you then.